Hey everybody, welcome to Roger and Me, aka Roger Ebert and Me, a movie review podcast that is also a tribute to Siskel and Ebert, hosted by myself, Brett Arnold, and film critic Mark Dusick of markreviewsmovies.com. It's a show where we aim to cover every new theatrical release and every new streaming release every Friday in the format pioneered by Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. That's the whole rub. The only guide to new release movies you'll ever need. That's our motto. Probably could be punchier, but it is what it is. And that's what we're here for. There are 7 movies to talk about this week. Or if you're Mark, there are 12. Mark reviewed 12 movies on markreviewsmovies.com. This was one of those weeks where, you know, I just missed a few despite having the option. One of these is a festival movie I saw ages ago. Mark will have to help me with. But there's one wide release. It's actually A24's biggest movie, definitely in terms of budget. It's a $50 million movie. And I have to imagine it's also one of its widest movies in terms of releases. And it's getting a splashy IMAX large format release. So we'll definitely be talking about Civil War up top. And there might be a Civil War amongst us hosts tonight about this movie. And I'm excited to get into it. There's a new Nicolas Cage movie that we may also disagree a little on. There's a underdog sports movie. There's a spider movie. There's a Johnny Knoxville movie. There's a fake Coen Brothers movie. And there's just an indie horror movie. That pretty much sums it up. Before we get right into the show, because I'm getting just constant criticism about my introductions here. Do you have anything to say, Mark? Or are you in fear of the commenter and you want to get going?
Oh, no, I'm good. I usually don't have anything to say, so I'm good.
I'm saving it.
I got to save it all for especially this week, because I was looking at the lineup and
we disagree a lot. There's a lot of
contentious for like the first half of this episode, I think.
Yeah, but when we're contentious, we're still kind to each other, which I think is probably not the Siskel and Ebert spirit that people want. Maybe we got to dig in further and get really personal with our insults, but
they never got personal.
Occasionally, I feel like Siskel would be both pushed more about the
personal tastes.
Sure.
Questioning of personal tastes is one
there
thing.
Was some great digs in there somehow, somewhere.
I wish
I was doing the part of the show where we rewatch that, but who has the time? Let's talk about Civil War from writer-director Alex Garland. Here's the trailer.
The United States Army ramps up activity.
The White House issued warnings to the Western forces as well as the Florida Alliance.
The future president assures the uprising will be dealt with swiftly.
Let me know if you want to try anything on.
Are you guys aware there's like a pretty huge civil war going on all across America?
We just try to stay out. With what we see on the news, seems like it's for the best.
Citizens of America, the so-called Western forces of Texas and California have suffered a very great defeat at the hands of the United States military.
Mr. President, do you regret the use of airstrikes against American citizens?
All right. I feel like I usually, since I'm in the driver's seat for the show, I often just will lead in with my biased opinion and then go, well, what did you think? So I'm going to let you lead the way because you felt at least more passionately about this than I did.
Slightly, yes.
Yes. So I'll let you, if you were just a mere, like, spoiler alert, if you were just a mere 3-star review, I might feel differently. But you're a 3.5. You're enthusiastic. You like this movie. I don't know how enthusiastic I am about my dislike of it. We'll talk about it. What is this movie and why did it work for you?
So it is set in an uncertain future, an unspecified future in the United States. California and Texas have seceded. The United States government and the military has gone on the attack. We don't learn much about any of the political situation, the economic situation, because none of that really matters in the midst of war when you're caught up in the middle of it. And that's what writer-director Alex Garland does here, is just throw us right into the... No, don't. They throws us right into the middle of it. I see you already getting ready to attack.
I turned my mic off. Let the listener know that that's what I'm doing here. Yes, I'm turning my mic off. I'll let Mark speak.
Yeah, sorry. This only means anything to YouTube, this little interruption here. because I can see him going. So it follows four journalists, three journalists and an aspiring journalist on a trek to Washington, D.C., because apparently, you know, basically they see the signs that the United States government, the president's about to fall. And so they want to go and try to get some images of the last stand and also possibly interview him. The journalists are played by Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, and Stephen McKinley Henderson, who's fantastic here. I think you would at least agree with that because he's just great in general. And then Kaylee Spaney, who we saw in Priscilla, plays the young aspiring journalist. I was caught up in it from the go because it tries to just leave the politics at the door and just show you this is what it would be like. This is what the situation would be like to experience of just being these four journalists on a road trip discussing all the dangers of journalism, the necessity of it, and the contradictions of it along the way, because that's what they're caught up in. They're watching people be killed. They're watching summary executions from the side that they're embedded with. And how do you deal with that? And they're watching as these unknown people who either don't care about what side they're on at this point because it's all pretty much done and they're just trying to survive, or because they're hiding something. There's a scene at a mass grave. I know we're going to talk about it because it's, I think that's the most harrowing scene in the whole film, where they don't want to explain which side they're on. And so how do you deal with that? How do you confront that? Do you confront that? Those are the questions that are posed when you are trying to be an objective journalist. How far can you take it? How far can you actually discuss or debate or fight back even against a group that is killing people indiscriminately? And what do you do about that? I found it harrowing as a visceral experience, just because there's this inherent cognitive dissonance of watching all of Americana, like Main Street, suburbs, the interstate, a country club, all this stuff that we just see as ideally American in some kind of point of view, just in flames or in rubble or readying itself for a battle. I found it harrowing on that level. And I know I'm curious. I really am curious what kept you at least from experiencing that visceral level of the action and of those ideas and of that stuff that's just thrown at you from the start. That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, I will definitely acknowledge that it's one of the loudest movies I've ever seen. It is very loud and it was played very loud in IMAX. So I definitely agree that it's loud. But I never found it to be intense or engaging on that level. And I think it's because the movie refuses to engage with itself. It's a movie that doesn't dare pick a side to offend either side, and like both sides in fun ways, where it's like they reference something called the Antifa massacre, which obviously as a viewer, your preconceived notions will inject whatever you want into that. It's the Antifa did the massacring, or was Antifa massacred? We are not told, but there's a scene that Mark is talking about that maybe you can take some, you know, liberties from and figure out what side you think is happening, whatever. But like, it really is, like, I know it's not the movie he made, it's not the political thing, but to make a movie that's so overtly political in nature and then still not engage with it, it feels like an empty provocation. That's all I could think about the whole time, despite me enjoying the lead performances, thinking Kirsten Dunst is great, despite playing an absolute archetype. Everyone's an archetype. That's why another reason that it's hard for me to get engaged with. There's archetypes that are doing like derivative war journalist stuff. Like, it's the conceit of the movie I really want to love, because it's what if a war on American soil was treated the way American media and movies treats foreign wars, where we don't have any context because American viewers largely probably don't know the interconnectedness of different factions of the Taliban in Afghanistan when they're watching a war movie like that. So conceptually, I love the idea. And then in execution, I just found it to be, I understand why people find it so intense and visceral. But again, it just manifested to me as loud because I was never engaged with it on a real level. And I think it does have to do with the fact that it's so decidedly not saying anything. It's not saying anything political. What it is saying is that it's definitely a movie about journalism, specifically war photojournalism. And you could arguably say, to quote a meme, it's about ethics in war photojournalism. And I think it actually is about those things. But I don't know if it engages with those things in a way that I ultimately found satisfying. It just felt like it's flirting with really grandiose ideas and then just kind of hammering the same point over and over again about what it means to be taking pictures of dead people and how, well, if I take a picture of a dead guy that I know, maybe it means something to me, but there's the facelessness, there's a to the inhumanity, and like there's something to the character. I appreciate Kirsten Dunst's like war torn or just like completely hollowed out by the experience where she doesn't feel anything anymore because of what she's doing. And the idea, and like I work in media, so I run into people of all different types of journalists. This movie has like the Vice kind style journalist who like talks about the gunfire getting him hard and that he's like truly just a thrill seeker. Is that journalism? You know, it is. And this movie portrays that side of it. And then it also portrays the side that Kirsten Dunst is playing, which is like the reporter who is so neutral that they just refuse to see a side in it, which is, again, you could say that's the perspective of the movie, and I understand that perspective. It just didn't engage with me, I guess. But like the idea that you like the neutrality is the point. I am here to point and shoot, and it gets posted online by my media outlet, and then the world gets to interpret it how they want to. And like it definitely gestures at these big lofty ideas, but then it just has rote execution, I thought, in actually like it's just a road movie where they're traveling. And like I didn't buy that, like, why the fuck would the president be in the Oval Office still in this scenario? It just like all the little things annoyed me, but like I just tried not to think about those. And sure, like the spectacle of the third act actually on the ground seizing the White House sort of stuff, like it delivers, I guess, as like intense war spectacle, like a war movie would. But, you know, it just didn't do anything for me. There's no stake or context because you're coming into this movie and it just wants you to like believe what you already believe and project onto it. And I found it to be like faux profound in that way, whereas trying to like say, you know, war is just people shooting at each other for no reason and they don't even know. It's just survival at a certain point. And I think some people will find that profound. And others like me will just scoff at it and go like, yeah, you didn't develop anything.
You loaded that statement. I could feel it. I could feel it.
I understand.
Profound, like this guy over here.
Well, yes. Mark finds it profound, probably. Yes. But I specifically read reviews that called out that moment as like the thesis statement of it all. Right. Like the guy sniping at another sniper and they're like, who's in the house? They're like, I don't know, someone who's shooting at me, so I'm shooting back at them. And like that's the whole point. But like it's really eye roll worthy, man. And like I really couldn't get past it. Just archetypes all over the place, the refusal to engage with the material on a real level. Interesting stuff about journalism though, like, and like thorny and cagey, and not just a valorization, not just a it's really important what these people do, which I think it does believe. I think the movie does believe it's important, but it also has like journalists having a ball at a bar after a suicide bombing just happened because they all got good stories.
We've seen that and we know about that happen. That just happens. There's just people going unwinding at the end of the day after their job. Their job just happens to be watching.
Right.
Yeah.
It's about
people
like
get killed. It's awful, but.
Yeah, it's about like having to be desensitized and just like, compartmentalized, whatever. But like then there's, of course, the audience cipher character in Kaylee Spanny, who like their arcs are just so fucking predictable and annoying and the way they intersect. And it's just like it can't just be a movie that is full of archetypes that dramatizes things. They literally like there's a part where. What's the guy's name from Dune? Stephen McKinley Henderson. He says to her, like, you're being hard on her because she reminds you of yourself, as if you didn't fucking figure that out by the 15 other ways the movie posits it. So I just found it to be very clunky the way it gets about its points. And I guess, I don't know. I had a lot of friends tell me that they found it really engaging and intense and like they left rattled and stuff. And I just left like thinking that it was too fucking loud. So it just clearly didn't work on me, but I'm not trying to be rude. And I've read some things that make me want to appreciate it. But it's just one of those things where it didn't, it just didn't work for me. And therefore, I don't feel like what you said, it's purposefully apolitical, which obviously it is purposeful. He made the choice. But like inscribing it as like a brilliant feat to me, or like a good choice, it just is a fundamentally it's a fundamental choice that doesn't work in a movie that's about a civil war to not engage with what the civil war is about. But again, no, I understand.
That's the whole point, is that there's a difference of opinion too. Because the president has given himself, in theory, has given himself a third term. Do we know if that's legitimate? Because they're embedded with the rebel forces. And so can we actually believe anything that is going on? Because they are only getting that story from here. And that's the only story that we get, because that's the narrative that's being spun by the forces that are on their side. It doesn't even assume to have a hero or a villain. And I think that's a really daring choice to just say that there is a distinct possibility that we are watching this entire movie from the perspective of essentially the Confederacy.
Yeah.
That this might be entirely legitimate. There could be an entire change to the Constitution for all we know that enables him to have a third term. He could have been the vice president and gotten into office. And so he's on his third term technically, just because he's serving like the constitutionally allowed 10 years that you can be president.
Yeah. See, it's annoying.
We don't know.
It's annoying that we don't know.
It's not annoying. It's not annoying. If you just look at it as a conflict that is uncertain, because both sides have different stories that they want to tell. And what is war if not just people having a narrative that they believe in so much they are willing to kill and die for? And that's what we are in this. And it just happens to be in the United States. And that's what makes it horrifying. And that's what makes it haunting. And if you did get engaged in the characters, and I'm surprised you didn't, at least on the level of having these actors play these roles and play them well, even if you think they are archetypes. And I know that you think some of the dialogue is on the nose, but they are actually talking. They're talking about these things, and they are showing who they are through their actions. Like that scene in the car, and they're, you know, passing between
the cars. The adrenaline junkie stuff.
Yeah. But it's not all the adrenaline junkie stuff. They're talking about this too. I'm just surprised that I could get it if you think there are.
It's the first movie of his I haven't liked, like including ones he wrote and directed. Like I was fully primed to like this. I'm also surprised I didn't like it. And I'm trying to figure out why as we talk. But I guess it's the fundamental disconnect of thinking that you can't make a movie like this. It just is like non-committal, cowardly to just like make this movie
I wholly disagree that it's cowardly. I think it's the only way you can do it. I think it's the only responsible way you can do it. And this climate, in this political climate, you can't just say the president's a Republican or a Democrat. You can't do that. Can't do that. And I also think that at that point, if he actually is a legitimate tyrant, you know, an actual dictator, autocrat trying to just stay in office, at a certain point, it's not going to matter if he's a Democrat or Republican, right? I mean, we could all agree on that. In this climate say it. And I think also just within the world of the movie, it makes sense that the partisan politics aren't going to figure into what is happening at a certain point, because it is this just entrenched thing, this entrenched obvious disagreement about what the country is and where it should go, that they're not talking partisan politics. That's for all the people like in Colorado and Missouri that they bring up, who are just sitting in their homes trying to pretend that none of this is happening. I really like that detail, because
you get that scene with Dunst where she like considers what her life would be like if she did that, kind of with like the dress scene, I guess, or whatever, which is kind of what I took that to be. So like, go ahead. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's okay. I'm kind of, I unloaded on that part. So
it's my biggest issue is that I found it boring. Like I just was bored by everything that was going on in it. And I wanted it to lean in to being the exploitation movie that it like flirts with being in that scene with Jesse Plemons, like where it actually goes hard and discusses racism. And like the only time the movie dares to like have a stance about like to depict something like that. And it just, that's what I mean by cowardly. Like it only has, it has one moment where it engages with the idea of racism. I don't know. It clearly wants to be like this Apocalypse Now style thing, and it just didn't hit. I wanted it to be more exploitive and, like, you know, the last line, or, like, you know, like the whole thing is them trying to, I mean, if I describe the plot, it sounds exploitation-y and silly, but the execution is just like too somber for me or something. It's like this sad thing that it doesn't have the tone that it should have, but, like, it has flirts of those tone it should have, like the final line that,
no, I don't.
You know what I mean?
I think you're putting your expectations on
the movie.
But you're saying that because the movie doesn't fit those expectations, it's not good. And I disagree with that. I think
as a movie that's about people who depict war or take pictures of war zones and stuff. Like, what is it saying other than like it keeps hammering the same point about the moment of like taking someone's picture at the moment of death and what that means to a person and how you compartmentalize it. Like, what is it saying ultimately? Like, if that's what it's about, like, what is the message of war photography that I'm supposed to get from this?
There's not a message. It's just showing you this is what it's like, and this is what you're experiencing. And there is an unclear nature, because the Dunst character says that she does this to try to warn people that these are the consequences of war. And as soon as this war breaks out, she becomes completely cynical and desensitized to the entire point of her job. And I think that's what it is. It's the question, what is the point of this? If we're just going to keep having war, if people are just going to keep fighting over this stuff, despite the fact that they can see on the news, and they can open up the newspaper and open up the internet and see exactly what happens, and they keep doing it anyway, what is the point?
Yes, so that is what I came away with too, the futility of it. Like, I thought I was shooting these wars abroad as a warning to America, don't let this happen here, is something she like literally says in the movie. So, yeah, I wish it engaged with that more. I don't know.
But it does.
I don't know. Doesn't it seem more interested in being a loud action movie that would like,
I think the last act, I think the last act gets there. I think the last act does get into that sort of the more action-y set PC sort of thing, because it's all the siege. I don't want to get into details. You know what's going to happen, because I mean, it's the setup of the entire movie, but that does do that. But there are still, I mean, if you're not involved in the characters, it doesn't matter, but there are still character beats that matter to those characters, and also to the discussion and the debate about journalism and what the point of it is. I think that's going on too. And so I was more forgiving of the broader action because it is still engaging with those ideas, despite the fact you didn't find them interesting. But that's why I found it compelling, because it is doing the action, it's doing the harrowing stuff, and it is engaging with ideas along the way.
I feel like Nightcrawler is a better movie about exploitation journalism and stuff like that, and like doing similar things that I enjoyed, if you're going to recommend similar things. But then, like, the problem with Civil War 2 is that I mentioned it being derivative up top, I think, but like, it really is so similar to so many adrenaline junkie journalists in war zone movies. There's like 15 of them that this movie's just pulling from. So like, it never engaged me on like a, wow, this is an original movie level either. I think I'm a 2-star.
Almost like this might be depicting something. It might be depicting something authentic and realistic. That's sometimes the archetypes exist for a reason, because it's the actual truth of human nature.
Maybe. Not here, but it's in other cases.
Maybe. Okay.
Yeah. Maybe. It's going out of its way, is my point, to like obscure both sides of it. Like with the Antifa massacre comment and various other situations in the movie.
I noticed that comment too, and I think you're right. I think it is intentional. I also think it's the right thing to do narratively.
It doesn't want to upset liberals, and it doesn't want to upset Trump supporters. So like, it's just this nothing of a movie that isn't about what it's actually should be about. 2 stars for Civil War.
I think it's also
you're allowed to keep talking. I wasn't trying to put
I'm sorry. Yeah, I hear it. 2 stars is what Brett's saying. I think that it'll be an interesting litmus test to see what people do pull out of it from different partisan sides, because maybe this will be a good litmus test for how close we are to it. Because if people are actually saying, hey, that guy was just like this guy in current politics, instead of actually focusing on what the movie's talking about, we might be in real trouble, because we can't get past the partisan stuff, even when you have a movie that is blatantly telling you don't do this.
Yeah, so. But like, is it supposed to be profound that in 2024 a movie is like, isn't war bad? Like, that's what I like. It just doesn't. That's what I mean. The faux profundity.
It's not just about is war bad though.
Yeah. What's so civil about war? Axl Rose.
3.5 stars.
Iconic quote.
That's what I'm giving it.
You know, I'm just jealous because I really wanted to enjoy this and I didn't. And I wish I had. So I'm very jealous of a 3.5-star review of that. I hope it makes money, I guess, for A24. It would be cool for this to be a hit, but also it would be fucked up for it to be a hit. Also,
I don't know how I feel about it. It depends on how people react to it. I mean, that's what's going to be.
I want to see, is the cinema score in yet from last night? Let's see.
No, probably not.
Tomorrow or later today. All right, let's move on to the next movie of the week, which I think we'll have less of a disagreement about. Arcadian. Starring Nicolas Cage and Jaden Martell and a third guy. Here's the trailer.
There are those who believe they came after the pollution people caused. And they're here to cleanse the planet of the human race. So we'll all become extinct. We have to stay vigilant. Do you understand?
Yeah.
All right.
I'll meet you right here before the sun sets behind that hill.
It was good to see you.
You're late!
Sorry, I lost track of time.
Are we safe?
Yes.
Are we secure?
Yes. Thank you for this food we were about to receive. Thank you for bringing us together as a family.
The trailer didn't really give away what is going on. I don't know. I guess we probably don't. It's not a huge spoiler, I don't think, the way the movie treats it. So we can probably talk about it.
No, it's not. Nope.
All right. Right on. Arcadian is an indie version of A Quiet Place. That's what it felt like to me. Post-apocalyptic movie with monsters in it. This one has Nick Cage as a father of twin boys. When the movie opens, they're babies, and he's like navigating this what looks to be recent post-apocalypse world, like warfare, like kind of like beginning of Terminator style war. You didn't really know what's going on. And then it cuts to, I don't know, 15 or 20 years or 15 or so years later, and his kids are teenagers and they're still living just, you know, kind of like living off the grid, just trying to survive in this post-apocalyptic world where there's monsters that, once revealed, honestly, the highlight of the movie is the creature design, which I saw someone on Letterboxd say is the closest we'll come to seeing Studio Ghibli monsters in real life, which I thought was a really astute observation, really nailed it. It's really tough to get a good look at the creatures throughout the movie. I think it's a little too dark and cheap for my liking. But when you do get a look, it's cool and it's confounding. And you're like, what is that? Is that its face? Is that a second face on its? It's very cool looking, very exciting, very scary. They do this thing that's, I think Mark got my reference because he's a video game guy, but they do this Katamari Damacy rolling into a ball move that is very scary and exciting. But so why am I ultimately 2.5, spoiler alert, on Arcadian? It's not bad by any means. I would never say this is a bad movie, but I would hesitate to say it's a good one too, just because I walked away going, that was so similar to so many other things. It never really made its own case for why this version of it needed to exist. And to be honest, maybe a spoiler, but it feels like not the most egregious bait and switch as far as Nick Cage starring in it goes, but he may be in it less than you think. But I didn't hate it, and I'm curious to hear why Mark liked it enough to give it a, you know, recommend.
I liked it because of the creature design. I also thought they were really innovative. Once you realize what that face actually is, and where because you think it's the mouth, and then you realize where the mouth is, it's really neat, just in terms of like an evolutionary thing, like what they're doing and how they're getting people into it's cool.
It's very
cool. Really liked the long extending arm that just keeps going. You don't know how long this arm is.
Yeah, it's going through. A long and arm. Got another, and then it's got a nail that got also goes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
It's really neat. But I really liked just having it be about a father and two sons, and the father trying to teach the son stuff, and the sons kind of getting it, but also being teenage boys who don't really care because they have other things to worry about, like being independent and going out and doing stuff. And the other son, who's not Jaden Martell, we should be fair, it's Maxwell Poor Jenkins.
Guy. Yeah, thank you.
I know.
Thank you for pulling
Maxwell
that up.
Jenkins. Yeah. He plays young Reacher. I had to look it up because I was curious. I'm like, I know I recognize him from something.
In the movies or the show?
In the show.
Got it. Cool.
Which is
haven't
good,
seen
by
the show.
Way.
I've heard it's great. It's yeah.
It is a good show. It's a fun show. But anyway, so it's and he's got a girl on a neighboring farm that he goes to visit. So I like that dynamic, and I really liked where it goes. And yes, Nicolas Cage isn't in it as much. He's got top billing because he's Nicolas Cage, and that's it. The real stars in the movie are the two kids, the two young actors. They're both really good here. And yeah, that's what got it for me, is just that I don't want to give away where it ultimately goes, but it's just something like on this primal level, what it's about, that it's just about a father teaching his sons and whether or not the sons are going to really learn it. And so that last moment really hit me, just because it is that basic and that simple, but that recognizably human, that's just what it's all about when it comes down to it.
It's the final line is, and that's why you always leave a note, like J. Walter Weatherman teaching your children lessons thing from Arrested Development. That exactly. would be a great gag.
That would be a good gag, but no.
I have to just harp more on the creature design. Remember the part where their jaws start moving all quick? Like,
yeah.
that was cool too.
That part was crazy. Again, that was the thing. Like, as soon as you realize, oh, what is this doing? Oh, it's just an intimidation tactic so it can do the real thing it wants to do. It's like, oh,
yeah. It's just all that stuff so well thought out. And not that the other stuff isn't well thought out. And like, in terms of being vague and non-committal, like the last movie we talked about, there's like, I would say this movie has a nameless apocalypse, but they have fun with it. Like in that scene where like the girl and the boy are like, in 10 seconds, sum up what you think happened to end the world. And they like each say a scenario. And I thought that was like a clever way to like not talk about it while also maybe get at what could have happened, but it's not really clear which version is real or if they're just lying or whatever. It's just too familiar of a post-apocalyptic thing for me to fully get behind. But it's one of those very enthusiastic 2.5s where I'm like, I'm not discouraging anybody from seeing it. I would even recommend it to some, but it really just felt like a movie for people that can't wait until June for another Quiet Place movie. It's very, did you find it similar to that?
It's kind of similar, just because it is that, you know, it's a domestic drama in a hold up place, but it has a lot less needless exposition, which I think, like that scene at the tree with the 10-second apocalypse. That was really clever, just being able to say, this is, you want to know, here it kind of is, but that's all the time we have for it is 20 seconds. Like, I have other things to worry about here.
Yeah. It just needed to do a little something more for me, but like that creature design is enough to, if that type of thing interests you, it's enough to go to the theater, check it out, or rent it on VOD when it's out. But yeah, it's a little underwhelming for me, but I'm not mad at it. So 2.5 for Arcadian.
Yeah, I'm at like a mild 3, just because I did connect to the father son's relationship and what it's about. That was enough to push it past just being a clever creature feature with really neat design and all that stuff. So it does go a little bit over the top for me on that.
I love it. Let's talk about The Long Game, starring Jay Hernandez and Dennis Quaid. Here's a trailer.
Frank mentioned that you served together. Marines?
Infantry. 141st Regiment.
I know you hear this all the time, but thank you for your service.
I don't hear that all the time, but I was proud to serve my country. I don't want to be a member of just any club. I want to play here.
I got to consider our other members, and they are just not used to seeing a Mexican on the golf course.
I work in a big shop from 12 to 9.
French ball boy?
It's not even a tough shot, Felipe.
Oh, yeah, Corda says you can't do better.
How about that?
Joe.
Where'd you learn to hit like that? How would you boys like to be the first members of the San Felipe High School golf team?
Us.
I wish I liked this movie more because I think the inciting incident that connects the team with the coach is actually really clever and funny. And the movie just never matches that energy for me. And it just kind of stuck wallowing in cliches and formula. This is the second of two movies this week. The first of two movies this week. We should have put them back to back. I didn't. Maybe we'll quickly swap them and put that one next. Two similar movies that are like very basic formula, specifically sports, a variant of the sports movie formula that do it either, depending on your argument, either do it well or don't do it well. I didn't think this one had enough juice in it to make it stand out. It just felt very amateurish to me. It looked like TV. It was just so milquetoast too. And just, you know, cliche sports story, specifically about overcoming racial tensions at a few olden times. I want to say it's not that old, but like in the past, it's just like the boys in the boat, but it's, has a racial element to it. And, it's just kind of full of caricatures, I guess, would be why it doesn't work for me. Just like all the racist cartoon villains versus these like lovable, scrappy immigrant people. And like it was, I don't know, it just had too many montages and too many cliches to ultimately work for me. But I'm assuming you agree to an extent, and then it just worked for you all.
I agree to an extent. It is all formula, definitely, in terms of the sports stuff. But I was caught up in it because it is about not just overcoming racism, but how do you do that? Because the coach played by Jenny Hernandez thinks that it's about assimilating. It's about playing by the rules, both the rules that are in the books and the rules that are just unspoken. And the idea that golf has all of these unspoken rules about how you behave and what people want when they're on the golf course and what they don't want when they're on the golf course and all of that stuff. It's really interesting because that's what society is like too. It's just this little microcosm of laws and rules and guidelines and what people say and what they won't say. And how do you navigate that? And then the kids, they're like, no, we're not going to play by the rules because these rules are unfair. They're clearly unfair. Why would we play by that? And so having that debate go on while it's telling the sports story and while it's showing the effects of this supposedly polite society on these kids and what it means that you want them to succeed and you want them to fight back, but how are they going to do it? I really appreciated the fact that it engages with that debate through the characters and through the narrative instead of just having it be a formulaic story. So for me, just having it, that discussion going on in the background, while I found it a compelling story that I didn't know about. And yeah, it's all formula, but it's still engaging watching these kids just get up there and prove themselves. It's, you know, when it does it right, that inspirational underdog sports story really works when it does it right. And I think this one does it right.
Yeah, and Jay Hernandez's character's way in is really interesting because he's like a veteran who's fought for America, right? But he's treated like an outsider because he's not white. And it's about him wrestling with that and trying to make it palatable for these people too. It can be fun. I wrote down the same thing. I said it can be fun when there's like camaraderie, right? During the golf stuff. But there's just too much other shit going on. And that stuff felt flat and uninspired, and it just hit every beat I expected it to. So it's weird that it's like, I found this to be an actually inspiring true story that was rendered cliche by its kind of, you know, amateurish execution would be my take on it. But it's not bad. It's not terrible. It just didn't really connect with me, despite ultimately I was like, that's a nice story. But it just, the movie version of it, I was like, oh, another montage. Okay, here we go.
I'm trying to figure it out. So the montages are, you're thinking like the actual matches, right?
Like the golf. And like the when they first are trained by Quaid or whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
when they, yeah, yeah,
yeah, that's to be expected. I mean, did you want to actually see a whole golf game?
I wanted the movie to be 15 hours long. Yeah, I want to see the whole game.
Okay.
No, I guess it's more, I don't know. It just, you know, when something's, it was unconvincing, I guess, in that way. I don't know.
It just reminded you of the formulaic elements because montage is just part of the sports thing. Yeah, I get that part of it. But what, it's amateurish, I guess, in that, but I don't know what part of it is egregiously amateurish. It's just, you know, it's just shooting.
It's just like the most sturdy enough movie. Like it doesn't do anything above and beyond what you expect it to. And maybe that's fine. But I don't know. I found it to be boring or something. It just didn't. I found it to be very long at just under two hours. One of those movies where I'm like, this felt like it lasted forever, despite having tidy montages that edited things quickly. It felt long. Nothing. You know, I'm not mad at it or anything.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And I think help. Like, you know, like my parents will enjoy it, but it's just not a movie that really. Needs my parents
and this guy over here
and this fucking guy is gonna like it. No, it's a nice movie that works better on paper for me. But like the diner scene, the cartoonish racism experience. Not to say that's not real and what it was, but it's just the way it's.
Yeah, but it's not all cartoony. The scene in the trailer where it's the guy, he genuinely wants to be able to make him a member of the country club. He just knows that there are a bunch of other racists around, and so he goes along with it.
Yeah,
like that's
so it's about the
racism.
That's just realistic racism. Yeah, that's fair. So it balances the racism. Yeah. I guess there's a lot of racism in it.
And the judge is, you know, that's another one. He's not like overtly evil in his racism. He's just, you know, he eventually kind of learned something along the way, but it takes some time. Even about those characters. I think that's the most important thing, is it's not about those characters. It's about how these characters that we're following respond to those characters.
It had the boys in the boat problem for me too, of focusing specifically on one guy instead of all of them.
Yeah, that's an issue. Yeah.
Yeah, that was another thing that I clocked, but it's, you know, not bad. It's a 2.5-star thing for me. I want to get there. There's just so many movies that do this exact story and do it better, but not to like belittle this version of it, or because it's like true life, presumably. But yeah, there's better renderings of this type of story. So it's a 2.5 for me.
Okay. And 3 for me. Yeah. Again, mild 3. It does enough different to merit a recommendation.
Now let's really get into a fight about Sting, even though you didn't like it either. You liked it more than me, to the point where we might fight about it. Here is the trailer for Sting, one of two Spider movies. Actually, one of two Spiders invade a apartment building movie that is out this month. There's another one, I think, next week out on Shudder called Infested. I hope it's on Mark's radar. I will try to get it on his radar if it's not, because I enjoyed that one. Here is the trailer.
It's on my radar. It's in 2 weeks. So
okay, 2 weeks away. Excited to talk about Infested in 2 weeks, but for now we'll talk about Sting, the other Spider movie that did nothing for me. I keep spoiling my opinion. I don't think anyone cares about that. But here's the trailer.
You called about the noises in your walls, right?
Oh no, not me.
You sure about that?
Hey there, little guy.
Charlotte!
I need you to watch Liam.
Why?
Because he's 6 months old and he eats paper.
Every time I try and connect, she takes 2 steps back.
Night, Ethan. You hungry?
I had forgotten that I really love the opening idea here too. The way that this movie opens, I think it's like the woman who has like dementia or something where she can't remember what she's doing, Alzheimer's. It has her calling an exterminator to come fix something, right? And the reveal there is that she keeps doing this. She's already called an exterminator who's been murdered by this fucking spider or whatever. And then this is like the next one that's coming. You see the body of the other one. I thought that was such a brilliant setup. And then it just, the rest of the movie sucks after that. It does nothing for me. It is a boring domestic drama about this family and this girl and her mom and her, was it stepdad, I think? I barely remember. Yep. I saw this movie like stepdad. A month. Okay, I saw it like a month ago and I'm straining to remember it. But all I, let me tell you why I was so disappointed with it. More so than you were, probably. This was sold to me well in advance of its release. I'm a guy who reads horror blogs. This was sold to me as the practical effect spider movie. There were many blog posts on Bloody Disgusting about how cool the spider was going to look and how they did practical. And it's just not fun. I mean, maybe at the end, by the time it's a big spider, there is a practical model of it or something and they use it. But for the most part, this is a movie with lame CGI that actually is too cheap to even have a lot of CGI. So it cuts away from most of the kills when there's a spider attack. So I just don't know who the fuck this is for, because I thought it was for me as a practical effect spider movie. They do not mind that. If it is, they completely wasted it, because I didn't get a sense of the spider at all. Big wasted opportunity. Spiders are scary as fuck, and it didn't make me scared in any way. I was basically scared for wasting my time listening to all this domestic drama bullshit. Like, why are you focusing so much on this when there's a giant, rapidly growing spider killing people? And tell me if this is a spoiler. We'll delete this if you deem this a spoiler, because I think I want to say it. Did we need the otherworldly twist for the spider? Is a spider not scary enough on its own? I didn't need the one-upping of why the spider is scary, I don't think.
It happens in the first like 10 seconds of the movie. It is not a spoiler.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
It's an alien spider. That's what
it's an alien spider. It's an alien spider, which could be fun if the movie was fun, but because it's not, I think it's stupid and I didn't like it. Insert shots of close-up practical effects sometimes. I guess I noted that they did do that a couple times. Are there bursts of gore? Not really. There's some blood once or twice. It has an ending that's like the Godzilla 98 movie, if you know what that means. I believe there's a spider roars in this movie, which they can get away with by saying it's an alien. But it was pretty funny that the spider's like making noises and stuff. It just doesn't deliver at all what I wanted out of a movie about a giant spider killing people. The kills don't work. The tension, there is none. I was just bored. I found it to be very boring and underwhelming and disappointing, especially because I was expecting practical effects and it didn't really give me a lot of that. And it also felt like it was shooting pretending to be in New York while shooting in Australia, which was very obvious to me also.
My problem with it is one of tone. It cannot figure out what it's trying to do. It can't figure out if it's being that, you know, a straightforward creature feature, which I think it works as when it gets like in the third act. I think when it does have the practical spider, the puppet and everything that you, which looks really gross and it's effective.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's not used enough. And I don't know if it's used completely, even when it is being used. There's got to be some, because I don't remember either. I know there's like a lot of movement of the spider, so there's got to be some CG going on in there too. I think it works better as a straightforward creature feature, but then there's like the broad comedy of the exterminator and
kind Jermaine of Fowler again.
Yeah, again, he's good. He's funny, but he's been different movie.
He's a funny guy who's been in a lot of movies I think are bad. That's where we're
yeah.
at. Yeah.
Yeah. And questionably, the woman with Alzheimer's being used for comic relief. That opening is kind of clever, but it's still like,
yeah, I guess it's mean also.
It is kind of mean, especially since that's the only joke around her for the rest of the movie. There's a sweet spot here. There is one. Arachnophobia hit it, I think. Tremors, the original Tremors hits it, where it's being that sort of tongue-in-cheek horror movie, but it's also doing the horror.
The horror is good, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's so, this one's going for it, and I don't think it gets there because it is, it's so disparate, and you're right, that domestic drama doesn't work. But that scene in the apartment when the stepdad and the mom are suddenly confronted with the spider, I really thought the movie was going to go in a completely different direction, and I was on board with it because it you know, it's one of those moments where the movie's either going to mean business or it's not. How far is it going to take that?
Yeah.
And I it's a little spoilery, but it doesn't mean business. That's all I'll say. It does not mean business as a straightforward horror movie. And so that felt fake. That scene ended up feeling fake. It really is just the tone. It's all over the place. It can't decide which mode it's going for. And I'm not sure what works best. I know the broad comedy does not work within the context of everything else it's doing. So that's, So I'm really mixed on it because I did like some of the humor that's baked into it, like when the alien spider crashes in that dollhouse and it's walking around like it owns the entire building. Like, that's clever. That's what this movie is going to be about. It's funny. It's a funny little in joke. But I don't know. I'm really mixed on it.
Just hang in there a couple more weeks. There's a good one. There's a good spider movie that'll scratch the itch. That one's about more like many spiders, which I think makes it more scary than one big alien spider.
A giant spider is less scary than multiple spiders.
Yeah, like 10, like imagine 100 little ones. So much scarier than one big one. And maybe there are thousands even. It's really intense. Oh boy. And it's really good. So 1.5 for me from Sting.
Oh,
it really didn't work for me. I was very disappointed by it. And you'll have to find out in 2 weeks how we feel about Infested. But I wanted to put the word out early. So people, you know, some people probably only have like I only watch one spider invading an apartment movie a year policy. So just to get ahead of it, there's a better one on the horizon. Don't, you know, keep your gun holstered. Don't go see Sting if you only do one. But if you want to do both, be my guest. What did you think? How many?
2.5 for me. I am very mixed on it, but I can kind of get that if you're really expecting the horror element of it. This doesn't scratch that itch until much later in the movie. And then like, what's kind of the point? And so, 2.5 for me.
Right on. I said earlier I was going to switch the order and I didn't. So we're back into the formulaic sports arena with Sweet Dreams starring Johnny Knoxville and other comedians. Here's a trailer.
Morris, alcoholic.
Is Clint Eastwood going to tell me to get off his lawn, bro?
All right.
I'm sorry.
I don't think I've been more than 2 days without drinking in the last 15 years.
You're here for a while. Do your chores and don't complain. It's pretty easy.
Everything's going to be okay.
Welcome to the loony bin.
You smell that?
Probably from the weirdo before you. Used to keep piss and Ziploc bags under his bed and collect his own eyelashes.
Hi, Dad. I miss you a lot.
I'm going to need you to contribute, be an asset, and teach these guys something.
What's that?
It's our 2015 softball championship trophy. We haven't taken it seriously in quite some time.
I had to wait for it to get to the setup to do us a little lifting so we don't have to say as much. You can see where that was going, right? If you didn't watch the trailer, Mark, what is Sweet Dreams about?
It's two stories. One of them is Johnny Knoxville going into a recovery program in this house, this group home, and trying to get clean after a really, really bad night out where he really finally thinks he's hit rock bottom. And then the other half is softball movie, underdog softball movie. And this really clashes because I think it works really well as this depiction of the of recovery, of just Knoxville's character. And Knoxville's really good here. I think he's a solid comedic actor, and there has to be some movie I've seen him in a more dramatic role, but I've never seen him do something like this, and he's really good. So that was a nice surprise just to have that performance in here. So he's just going through the motions and trying to get into this program and figure out how it can actually work. Even though he has tried before in the past to, get sober, but he hasn't been able to, but this time around, he's really going to do it. I like that. I liked all the camaraderie and the infighting and how it's all really about just being together and supporting each other as much as you can while you're in this program. I thought all that stuff really worked. Then the softball stuff comes in and it's a completely different movie It's more overtly funny. It's trying to be funny with all of the, you know, characters being bad at the game in some way. Yeah. And then the montages, as you brought up.
Oh, yeah.
The long game.
Plenty of that.
It doesn't work. It's not as engaging at all. It's nowhere near as engaging as all the stuff in the program with all those characters.
You're right. And that program stuff works because, as you said, Johnny Knoxville is like actually real, not comic performance that gets really dark. Like, it's not just he's an alcoholic. It's like his rock bottom is so bad. It's like, I left my daughter home alone and she left the house and got locked out. And then the neighbors had to come find her and she's 8 and I wasn't around. And now the cops are around. Like, it's just so harrowing and bad that you do feel for him and you do root for him. And it you know, it's one of those things. It's like, it's basically the same exact situation as the other movie where I'm like, its formula is comfy and cozy, but it barely does enough to stand out. I feel like they could have done more with, like, you don't really get a good sense of who his character was. Like, he's like a big shot, but like, he's like a music video director.
He's a music video director. That stuff. No, you're right on the money with that. Cause there's so much stuff that feels as if it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Halfway through the movie or more, like his profession and why he's a big shot and why people in the newspapers care about the fact that he, you know, had this raucous night out and what he did. And then you also don't realize the full extent of what that night out is until later on when he needs to apologize for what he's done. And you're on the money at that. It's wasting so much time on the softball stuff that we don't get to really know him and what happened.
It's such an easy thing to just like say he's like, I don't know, something more that would make more sense than a big shot music video director, where I'm like, why does anyone care about this guy? Like, it could have just been like an actor, you know, it could have been a director, period.
It was weird. He was big in the 90s too, on top of it. And we don't, I don't know. Unless you're, I'm trying to think. David Fincher did some directing of music videos in the 90s. Who else? Spike Jonze. Like, unless you're one of those two guys, I don't know what music videos directors of the 90s are doing right
now. You know, when Ben Affleck made that alcoholism movie that was about the basketball team, like, that felt different because we all brought the metatextual nature to it of Ben Affleck being an alcoholic and this being like a very personal movie. And I'm a big Johnny Knoxville fan. I don't think this is his story. Like, I don't think maybe he has. I know, just because other people around him have had so much worse stories, like Steve-O or whatever, the Jackass boys. But like, I've never thought of, maybe this is a part of Knoxville we just haven't known about. But like, it lacked that personal touch that explained why Ben Affleck wanted to make that movie. Like, it's just like, okay, well, if you're just doing a formulaic guy, like Champions last year, Woody Harrelson, right? A disgraced coach has to coach a special needs team. Like, it's kind of one of those, but it's disgraced, just drunk guy has to coach a softball team, but he doesn't actually have any connection with softball. So like, it's just kind of clunkier than it needs to be, right? Like, it could have been honed.
That too. He just kind of, his dad was a fan of baseball and took him to games. Yeah. And that's it. And baseball, he doesn't even like softball. Like, yeah. Wait, so like, how maybe, is he so good at this?
Maybe it's subversive in that way where it's trying to be like, no, we know the formula cliche says he's like an ex-baseball coach, blah, blah, blah. No, we're just going to have him be a guy who, this is the thing he has to do because it's the thing he has to do. And maybe there's some merit to that, but it is just kind of confusing. I was going to walk in here and give it a 3-star pass, but honestly, I think the honest answer is it's a 2.5-star movie. Really good performance, really strong stretches where you feel for Knoxville. And then then it just becomes formula baseball. You know exactly what's going to happen. The stakes manifest as they will. It's all
gotta save the house, man. You gotta save the house.
Gotta save the house. Gotta get the specific exact amount of money or whatever. It's not bad. I'm delighted to see Johnny Knoxville in a role that isn't just like, he was in Jackass, so why don't we put him in Action Point and have him fall down a slide a bunch or whatever. Like, it's definitely more than that. And I always want to shout out a movie that was a Comedy Central staple in my youth that probably, I'm sure you reviewed it actually. Did you review Big Trouble in 2002?
Big Trouble.
Elmore Leonard.
I think I might have.
It's a good movie. Boy. I really think it's underrated. Johnny Knoxville is hilarious in it. There's a scene that's for some reason stuck in my memory every time I go to an airport because they're trying to figure out, they're trying to pick someone up at the airport and they're like, trying to decide whether they should go to departures or arrivals. And he's like, well, we're trying to depart, but like they're gonna be arriving. he couldn't figure out where to go, and it was very funny to me. And I'm delighted to see him.
Oh, stretch guess his... what? Add it to the list.
Oh my God, Mark hasn't seen Big Trouble. Where is my list? Movies Mark hasn't seen: Unleashed, Joe Dirt, Baghead, Duplass Brothers version, and now Big Trouble, the Elmore Leonard adaptation that was poorly reviewed and didn't make a lot of money. Probably it stars Tim Allen. Definitely was a cable staple in the early mid 2000s.
Got Rene Russo in it. That's
it's got Rene Russo. Point, so. I recommend it. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I liked it. Anyway, let's move on to this. Did you give a star rating?
2.5. I don't think I did. 2.5. Got it.
This is a Coen Brothers esque film that I was very surprised. Again, I'm spoiling it. I was very surprised to enjoy this movie. I don't know why I'm feeling like doing that today, but I do. All right, Leroy, Texas. Here's the trailer.
Kind of seemed like you were just going to keep on going.
Can't be too careful.
You worried I was some sort of deranged maniac?
Same goes for you. Maybe someone paid me to kill you.
What?
Where's Leroy?
I don't know if you've heard, but I'm a private detective now, and I saw something that you might find interesting.
Where are you going?
See a movie.
Do you know when you'll be back?
Just eat your pizza.
I'd like to buy a gun.
I don't care how you do it. It's just got to be done tomorrow.
This movie's fun. It's a lot of fun, and I don't know if it would be if it didn't have Dylan Baker, an actor I really enjoy, as the hitman, if it didn't have Steve Zahn as a private detective, if it didn't have John, I never know if it's Magaro or Magaro, John Magaro from Past Lives, Indie Darling. He's like the lead guy in this. It is such a, it's very, did you immediately think of the Coens as well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, flat out, it has that mixture of the dark neo-noir stuff, but with a lot of comedy in it, of just how bumbling all the characters are. So, yeah, it definitely has Coen vibes.
Yeah, it's definitely like a mistaken identity crime sort of thing all mixed together. But it's never, I was really engaged with the quote unquote mystery of it all, even as it's just kind of lumbering along and you think, you know, this could just be a Coen Brothers wannabe thing, but it manages to make a name for itself, or like it manages to stand on its own, I guess, because of the performances. Why does this work so well? And tell me what it's about. Sorry. I'm putting it all on you.
Oh, no, don't make me do the plot. Oh, God. The plot is so convoluted and I'm okay with it. But it's just about like it's so John Magaro plays, or Magaro. I don't know either. I know we figured it out for Past Lives and I've forgotten now. He plays Ray. His wife is cheating on him. Steve Zahn's hapless detective, the private investigator, is doing some other case that he takes a photo of the wife going in and out of a hotel room after a long time. And so he figures it out. And instead of confronting her, he eventually he tries to get her money to open up a hair salon, even though her only job description is she was a beauty queen way back. And that's it. So there's all these little funny details of just how bumbling these characters are. There's like Zahn's character has detective spelled wrong in his business card. And it's funny as a joke that he has that word, the most important word, spelled wrong, but also that it has taken so long for someone to actually point it out to him, which means he doesn't have a lot of business to be handing out these business cards someone to point out the typo on them.
So funny.
It's so funny. The plot, I think, is a mess. I lost track of who wants the money and why they want the money and where the money came from and where the money is. And I didn't care. And that's, I think, the most important thing, is that just because of how fun these characters are and how good the performances are, that I let those things carry me through the confusing plot. Because I was more interested in how these characters are going to react and behave within those situations than I was of the actual plot and what it means. because it is just really good. And you're right about Baker. Baker is a fantastic character actor. And that opening scene, he is so good. He nails that scene completely of being sinister and also very darkly funny. And that sets the entire tone for the film. Without that scene, I don't think the film works.
It's a great scene go ahead.
Sorry. You have to have that set up for it to work, because otherwise you're just thrown into like sort of wacky hijinks with the PI. But you need that dark underbelly of the story to be there too.
And the way that it comes back to the hitman ultimately, like, it's very clever structure, actually. I think the way that it is like, oh, so this is who he's supposed to, that's who he thought he was. Like, it's really
when he pulls up next to the parking lot, it's like, oh
yeah. So like, the movie's about an emasculated man who, like, and the premise is just so funny. Like, what if the most pushover guy on earth accidentally had an opportunity to become a hitman and get what he needed? And it's just like, it sees that premise through in really fun ways. And there are so many funny running bits in addition to like just Steve Zahn being a kind of bad detective. There's also like this running gag with the cops who treat him like he's not a cop because he's a private detective. They just keep fucking with him the whole time. And it's hysterically funny to see them just be like, fuck you, woo, and doing like wheelies and donuts as they fuck with him and like impound his car or whatever. But there's this one moment where I think it's Dylan Baker. Dylan Baker's just asking the cops for information about like a crime that happened in the area. And the bit is just that the cop will not stop offering information. Like, the guy's like, oh, what happened here? And the one cop should be like, no, I'm not going to tell you, sir. Please move along. But the other cop is like, oh, yeah, guy died. Here's his name. Here's his address. Here's what he did. Like, he just tells him everything the guy wants to know. And it's so funny. And I promise you, I didn't ruin the bit. It'll still work. I didn't give specifics. It's so funny.
I really liked, you said it was stolen. We were talking about it. But I really liked the bit with the wife bringing coffee while the auto shop owner is trying to threaten the two.
Yeah, they're in the car doing a threat situation, and the wife is just trying to help out. Yeah.
Did you also like what you find out about the wife when they go to talk to her about the money and everything?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm just trying to find my little slice of happiness in this world.
Yes.
And you'll understand one day. Those two guys understand, and they're going through that too. I really liked that.
That's what I mean.
Tinge of loneliness and melancholy beneath it all too.
But like, that's what makes this movie stand out and not just a knockoff. Like, it actually has like ideas that it develops throughout the whole thing. Like, how Zahn and Magaro are kind of two sides of the same coin too, of like two guys who aren't taken seriously in life and not respected, and they're dying to be taken seriously. Like, it's clever. It's really clever. This is like a really strong three. I really enjoyed it. I can't believe how much I enjoyed a movie that is essentially, you could describe it as, oh, it's just a knockoff Coen Brothers movie. But it really is great at being that. Like, arguably just as good at being that as the real Coen Brother movie, Drive Away Dolls, this year. Like, it's similar to me in how much I enjoyed it. I thought this was a blast. Very strong three.
Yeah, strong three for me too. I was not expecting it. It kind of came out of nowhere. I liked the cast, obviously, so I had that when I sat down to watch it. I knew the cast was going to be good at least, but no, it gets the tone right, and it goes in directions I was not expecting. Not in terms of the plot I don't care about it, just how that tone evolves so that you feel something for a lot of these characters, even characters that you don't think you're going to, because they're ancillary characters or they're the villain. Just like, oh, I get it. You're all just miserable people, and it's awful. And how do you find that happiness? It's a strong movie. 3 stars for me too.
Yeah, very fun, very unexpectedly fun. I love when a movie just surprises you. This felt like a VOD thing I could ignore, but it's very good. I hope everyone checks it out. All right, now Mark's gonna do the heavy lifting here. This is a movie I saw like a year ago or something, and I didn't like it, so I didn't retain a lot. But I can definitely tell you why it's disappointing. I remember that. Here is All You Need Is Death. Here's the trailer. Excellent title. An excellent premise, unfortunately. Here's the trailer.
The future is picked clean. Treasure lies in the past. We find beauty where others have overlooked it. Then it's up to you to find the places where a rose springs up from the corpse of times past.
We think we know where we might find a singer who has a song. Previously uncollected, now not.
I love the idea of a movie about a haunted song that's never been sung before, but this movie is very boring. Please explain why it doesn't work. Because I don't remember.
So it starts off sort of just these two people going around Ireland looking for old folk songs that would be forgotten if people stopped singing them because they're just ancient things. And they're doing it. The whole background of this movie is just confounding. So I think there's like this secret organization that's collecting these folk songs for unclear purposes, but they're kind of like trying to say, like, if you take this old song that nobody knows about, you can kind of get a shortcut to being famous by using that song as a pop hit. It doesn't make any sense. And they introduce like two different people that they're trying to sell these songs to, and one of them never shows up again. Anyway, it's an interesting premise. And then it turns out, oh, one of these songs is haunted. It's talking about this ancient warrior woman or peasant woman who fell in love with the king and then she got punished. And when you sing the song, it unleashes demons. But also the demons are always there, but also the demons don't really matter because it's more about recreating the instance of the song, the story the song is telling, and that's the real horror of it. It's all over the place. That's the big problem with it, is that it cannot pick a lane. It cannot pick from the many, many lanes it has open to it. It can't pick one. And so it just feels like a mess of a narrative. I couldn't take it. It just so many, like,
I couldn't take it either. I found it insufferable. I remember
the son of the woman is willing to kill this random dude, that has nothing to do with it. But then he meets the woman he thinks killed his mother, and he's like, oh no, you're cool, and spends the rest of the movie with her. Like, I don't, why did he kill the guy? The guy is innocent. He just told him, like, oh yeah, this woman exists and she lives in this town, and that's worthy of death. But
yeah, I just found it boring and confusing. And the one thing I remember is the Irish folk song has a title that's more like a giallo movie than a folk song. Isn't it like Love is a Knife with a Blade for a Handle or something?
I think that's exactly it.
Yeah, that is such a funny name, and I love that. But yeah, this did absolutely nothing for me. And my only note was they should do an American remake about a couple of Grateful Dead fans on a quest to find the tape of an unreleased show. That would be a better movie than this. I don't know what the horror element is, but we're working on it.
I don't think the filmmakers knew what the horror element of this one was. So that's, you know, fair enough. You got.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally fair. Yeah, sorry it's a short review, but I have nothing else to say.
I didn't like
either.
The title. I'll make it a little bit longer. I didn't like the title. I know you said it was a clever title. I didn't like it. It's a pun.
Oh no, I meant I guess you're right. I did say that. Go ahead.
That's it. It's a pun with no foundation within the movie.
Because it's a Beatles song, you mean? Or
yeah, it's like that's it. It's just, and you know, like if yesterday became a slasher movie, that would be a good title for it. But no,
I see what you mean. There's like also that, I believe, Edge of Tomorrow, which has hilariously been retitled to Live, Die, Repeat on home video. I believe the title of the novel that's based on, the graphic novel, is All You Need Is Kill, which I've always thought was a great title. So it just feels like it's ripping off things that already exist. 1.5 for All You Need Is Death.
1.5 for me, too. There we go.
All right. That has been Roger Ebert and me for the week of Friday, April 12th. Enjoy your Civil War. It appears to be on its way to a $22 million weekend mark for A24 at 2.9 last night. That's the breaking box office figures from the Roger and Me podcast, what we're known for. Stick around for the house band. It's Alien Ant Farm.
The show starts in one.
I choose I don't think I can go on.
Dylan, son. Shut up.